Scum by David Dennis, as read by the author. Chapter 1. Scum is lying incapacitated on the side of the road. Everything is perfect. The world, perfect. My life, perfect. My situation, perfect. Me, perfect. My name is Scum. Well, actually, that's not my real name. It's short for Scott Umbridge. I've had this nickname since I was 7. My parents apparently didn't realize that my name would be so easily transferred into something potentially damaging to a small child. Idiots that they were. They're both dead now. My dad was some insurance guy, but he didn't actually even sell insurance or do anything really memorable or useful, really. He just crunched numbers for an insurance company or something boring like that. Come to think of it, my father never did anything notable his entire life. I never understood how a man could be so okay with complete, unbearable mediocrity. The boss shit on him, his job shit on him, the whole fucking system shit on my dad his entire low-ridden life. His wife wasn't even attractive. Mother was a sales associate for our local Walmart. Mostly she was just one of those sad-ass greeters that didn't actually greet anyone but seemed to just stand at the door and look awkward, like it's their job to make other people feel uncomfortable. Either way, they were both just sad examples of how low people would stoop to make a few pennies for the wish fountain of corporate greed. Fuck them anyways, they're both dead now. Most of the people I knew in my childhood are dead now, and if they aren't, they ring out like echoes in my psyche. Like they're there, but only as ghosts or something. I think I might have had an aunt, but I'm not sure. Or was it a cousin? I remember being around 15 when things started to fall apart. The decline of what was once known as the United States of America and the surrounding nations of the world is such a sordid, confused affair, and I've never met anyone who could explain it properly. There were wars and conflicts and uprisings, but mostly it was a long, sad, slow rotting from the inside out. The cancer that we called our society had finally taken its toll, and the chemotherapy of the corporate-controlled entertainment industry couldn't cure it anymore. Then, like a withered flower, everything that was dead had become something new and beautiful again. It was as if the collective American consciousness was written on a single note of paper, and that note was crinkled up. Not quite torn or burned, but crinkled, tossed away and forgotten. Then honor and courage turned into rage and destruction, which turned into survival. Pure, unadulterated, unmarked by greed or passion or desire, survival in its simplest, most virginal terms. The human race, once a dying 85-year-old man, was remade overnight into a 13-year-old girl, naive, simple, fresh, and untainted. I also shared my first kiss when I was about 15, at the group home for young adults after my parents died. Her name was Stacy. I don't remember many names, but I'll never forget hers. The power was out in the group home, so the girls and boys both had to stay in the boys' quarters, and Stacy was this girl who had a crush on me. I guess I didn't talk much then, after my parents died, so I had a cool, mysterious, strong, silent type thing going on. I wasn't really fishing to get laid at the time, but I've never had trouble with it either. But this Stacy girl just snuck into my sleeping bag without even asking me. To this day, it was the sexiest thing anyone has ever done to me. She just curled up next to me, put her left leg between mine, and wrapped her hands around my neck, and then without even asking, kissed me like there was no tomorrow. Fear does that to people. Every time the power turned out, we all thought it would be the last time we'd have power. Stacy had never made love with a man, and I had never made love with a woman, And there we were, both of us, in the pitch dark, our bodies curled up tight together. Fear of death and fear of an uncertain future had led Stacy to do something she'd be too afraid to do if things hadn't gone the way they did. She died later that year. I can't remember how. I wasn't there when it happened. There wasn't enough of her left to fill a grocery bag, from what I've been told. Could have been a stray mortar blast or contact with a landmine, lots of possibilities. Point is, I never saw her again. I guess we were in love for a while, but losing Stacy taught me the first of many lessons. Don't get attached. Avoiding attachment is imperative if one is expected to survive in the landscape. The landscape is what some of us drifters have taken to calling America now. Less of a place and more of an open concept. There are rules if you want to survive in the landscape. I learned the rules the hard way, and I'm lucky to be alive after the experiences that led me to where I am today. I remember once being robbed at gunpoint during some of the drug runs I did every now and again for food and supplies. The guys were real slam heads, and one of them, this bald skinny asshole, was holding a gun to me, his hand shaking. I swear to God he was gonna shoot, and then out of the blue, a brick fell from the building we were standing next to and crushed his skull. Blood was everywhere. The guy next to him was so shook up, he started throwing up and I made my escape. I've had my share of close calls. It's funny how looking back always makes things look different. At the time, something that seems so clear and vibrant can turn into a distant fog on the horizon. Watch a movie and it's all there, fresh and real. Then leave it for a few years or even a decade and return to the same movie and you'll see things you swear weren't there before, even though they were. That or certain things that you just knew were part of the movie will be missing suddenly. The movie hasn't changed, your perceptions have. That's why it's so hard to nail down truth in the haze of history. Sometimes I suppose we all get a little too caught up with the why and how and forget that what led us to where we are is never as important as the fact that we're here. The movie doesn't change, we do. That's why I'm not too concerned with the past. The more time you spend looking backward, the more likely you are to stumble. And that brings me to the beginning of this story, where I'm lying on my side in what seems to be an endless field of dead grass on the side of some low-ridden road somewhere. The sun was beating down and I wasn't wearing anything above my pants. All my belongings had been taken and I was beaten, bruised, broken, and bleeding. Still, pain is an old familiar friend, always there to remind me of the important things. Things like survival and endurance become suddenly crystallized in the fires of pain. Reaching out, I grab them and hold them dear like an old lover, forgotten but never forsaken. All is not yet lost as long as I'm still breathing. Besides, they left me with my most prized possession, my pet fish. Lying about a foot away from me in her clear plastic prison, Suki was swimming softly, gracefully continuing her lifelong dance with no partner. I reached out slowly and pulled the bag closer. I winced and grunted as I suddenly realized that my arm was broken, and it likely was not alone in its plight. Unable to move, I stared into the clear plastic bread bag and watched as Suki danced for me. Left, then right, then left again. She is all the beauty in the world to me now. My Suki, my precious love, my fish. Having a pet is an important countermeasure, a sweet and gentle reminder that all is not yet lost during times when I begin to doubt the landscape or feel the cold grip of loneliness on long journeys. The landscape chose Suki for me, through a process of brutal elimination. My first pet was an elephant named Jonesy. I found him at the Buffalo Zoo, stuck in his cage, barely surviving. I had just escaped from a fight, and I felt like I was looking at the soul of a kindred spirit as I stared into the decrepit, rotting concrete cage this malnourished beast called a home. I had to set it free, but not right away. I figured it would be useful for drug runs, and boy was it ever. Jonesy was already trained pretty well prior to the death and defection of whoever ran the zoo, and so it only took a few weeks of visits to the cage for me to build trust to the point where I could let him out. I used fresh vegetables from my trades to reward him for being calm, and eventually he learned that I wasn't out to hurt him. Pretty soon I had strapped an old car seat to his back and I was off and running, delivering drugs from my new vehicle. Jonesy was gunned down on a drug run a few years later. I miss that big son of a bitch more than anyone I know. After I lost him, I stopped doing deliveries and set to finding a new pet. My next pet was a dog named Duke. I found Duke holed up in a house way down in the boonies by Darien Lake. Surprisingly civilized considering what he'd likely eaten to survive. He was murdered by some raiders a year or two later and dragged away to be eaten, I assume. I can't blame them much as I wound up eating my next pet, a wild cat named Austin. Malnourishment means desperation. I discovered that I don't like cat meat very much. It's got a really weird texture. Next up was a rat named Dexter that infected me with what I'm assuming was dysentery after only one bite. I quickly disposed of him in a ditch somewhere. I can only assume that he is living a fulfilling family life right now. That was about the time I found Suki, swimming gleefully in that very same ditch, and I knew I had found my soulmate. Quiet, undemanding, protected by plastic, and best of all, too small to eat. My parents always got me goldfish when I was a kid. My dad had a severe allergy to pet dander, so I never had a dog or a cat like all the other kids. To think I used to envy those poor sons of bitches. I never even gave names to my fish back then, most of them barely lasted a week. Suki had been going strong for over a year. She's a real miracle. I could barely move. A few of my ribs were likely broken as well, but it's hard to tell. If I stayed there too long, I'd be liable to either starve to death or fall prey to a rapist. There are more of them out in this area, especially by the falls. Every area's got its problems. I met a man once from Boston who said everyone out there was prone to looting and fighting over material things like hoarders. Every city has its sin. Evening came. The hot scorch of the afternoon sun began to simmer into a soft, comfortable haze. The sun itself, which was just recently observing my pain with apathy, was now red and tired, slowly sinking to awaken again in another landscape too far away to know. I closed my eyes and thought of a faraway land. I thought of China. I imagined a big globe and little men standing on it. Little Chinese men. They walked around the globe, waded through the ocean, and invaded America. With their little stubby legs, they kicked all the little Americans into the Pacific Ocean, and we all drowned because we don't know how to wade through shallow water like the Chinese. Then they all danced and celebrated on the globe like little happy monkeys. A sharp pain shot through my side and pulled me back into a full waking state as if my body needed to remind me that I should be focusing more on it and less on myself. I started to realize that this pain was actually from my bladder telling me it was full, but with a few broken ribs and a broken arm, I had a hard time bending over to unzip my pants, one of the few articles of clothing that the raiders left on me and relatively intact. For the next few seconds, anyway. I scrunched my eyes and let her rip. I knew it was going to make sleep a little more uncomfortable, but I didn't have much of a choice. I felt the urine dripping down my leg, filling up my pants, pooling around my pelvis. It was uncomfortable, wet, and warm. A few seconds later, the smell hit me. Even Suki started swimming a little faster. I stared at her plastic bag full of water for a moment. I was so thirsty. But I couldn't kill Suki, I just couldn't. There was still some time before I started resorting to things like that. 5 minutes later, it began raining. Sometimes the sun is shining on me, other times it rains exactly when you need it to. I flipped my body so I was lying on my back. Not easy and not unpainful. In a few seconds, however, I managed to open my mouth wide to catch as much rain as possible. The rain also did the unpleasant job of cleaning the urine off my pants. This was just what I needed. Never underestimate Providence. Then again, some might say that Providence would be avoiding getting the shit kicked out of oneself to begin with. I guess if that were true, we'd never see it. Funny how we only see good when it's splashed on bad. Eventually, despite the rain, despite the wet, despite the pain, my brain shut down and I fell asleep. Pretty soon after, I was dreaming. I dreamt I was in a TV sitcom. I was the quirky weirdo character, not the main character, but the crazy one that everyone likes, like Lotka or Kramer. I was hanging out in an apartment watching a hilarious TV show that no one in the audience could see, but they all laughed whenever I laughed. Then the door opened, and my roommate, the serious straight man, walked into the apartment. I looked back and saw that he was all wet from the rain. I thought I was perfectly dry, but looking up, I noticed that the apartment was leaking. Suddenly, there was no roof on it at all, and rain began to pour down into the whole apartment. Both of us were soaked, and the audience soared with laughter at our predicament. So we both left from there and went to a local roofing company. There was no traveling, just some handy editing. The roofer was angry and kept calling us numbnuts for some reason. He threw his wrench at my roommate's face and it bounced off comically. The audience continued laughing. We left the roofers and went to a coffee shop to sit down and discuss our misfortune. Once there, my beautiful girlfriend showed up, sat on my lap, and made out with me. This, of course, made my roommate jealous, so he got huffy and left, and the audience laughed even more. From there, I went to my hot girlfriend's apartment and spent the night there. The audience disappeared as we started having sex, her on top in the cowgirl position, riding me like there was no tomorrow. Up and down, in and out. It was great. Sometimes I forget how long it's been since I've done something like this, but that's okay because I have my dreams, I guess. Here I can fuck all the women I want. No regrets, no obligations, no commitments.